players who believe in analytics.
Curry, way downtown, bang, bang!
You don't like NBA basketball!
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the GM's Office. Liam Ellison here alongside Jared Gunn, as always. It's a cold, windy, and blustery afternoon, Jared, here in Melbourne. How are you this Saturday afternoon?
Hi, Liam. I'm very good today, and I'm really excited to talk about this game. This Game 7 Clippers-Spurs game from 2015.
Yeah, it should be good. Well, it is that Game 7 of the first round between the San Antonio Spurs and your Los Angeles Clippers. Of course, the Clippers end up getting the win in really a historic game for the franchise. I enjoyed watching this one, I must say. I was, Jared, I was in the lounge room, had the fire going here. It is nearly winter in Australia for any overseas listeners. And yeah, enjoyed watching this game.
Yeah, Liam, I was very similar. I was in the lounge room watching this on the big screen. And Liam, this game, it happened on the day of the infamous Manny Pacquiao-Floyd Mayweather fight, for a little bit of trivia. I remember it very well, watching the game followed by the fight back in 2015. So, yeah, there was a lot going on that day. And, Liam, this game and this whole series, for a matter of fact, didn't let down anyone.
Yeah, I was actually wondering what that reference was that Chris Paul made in the post-game interview about let's go watch the fight. So there you go. That you've informed me of a nice little bit of trivia there. You know, obviously, this was peak of the Clippers era, Jared. So deep, weren't they, the bench for the Clippers during this season?
Yeah, Liam, we had some fantastic options. Jamal Crawford, I'm pretty sure that he was sixth man of the year this season for the Clippers. And Glenn Davis, he provided a really good role. He came in late into the piece as a signing after the trade period had finished, Liam, if I remember correctly. But we did have a lot of veterans on the bench. Hedo Turkoglu was there. And then we had a fantastic starting lineup too.
I forgot about Big Baby, I must say. When I saw him first check into the game, he brought back some memories for me. I mean, look, was this towards the end of his NBA career? He seemed to fade out quick when the end came.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that this was his last dance, Liam. As an NBA player, he was pretty disgruntled. I think he thought he was going to come back to the Clippers, and he spoke quite harshly of players like Chris Paul and the franchise as a whole as well.
Interesting. I mean, look, he played 11 minutes in this game. He was pretty effective, I thought. Had a couple of nice little moments, both defensively and offensively. Had two blocks in that time. You know, bit of an aside note, Jared, though, with the Big Baby. I must say, I find it interesting kind of the fact that he garnered this nickname, Big Baby. I mean, I gather that he kind of got this from having, you know, some troubles throughout his career, having that famous photo of him crying on the bench, and then obviously was always a little bit out of shape. It's funny that these sort of negative connotations actually turn into an endearing nickname for the guy.
I know, Liam. It's it all fits the piece quite well, Liam. And he played with a lot of passion, Glenn Davis. He was fantastic at taking the charge. That was one of my favourite things, Liam. We'd put him in, you know, in some important, crucial times and games throughout the Lob City era, especially this season, of course, Liam. And he'd take a few charges, and he was a good piece defensively. But Liam, it actually makes me want to ask the question to you. Is Glenn Davis the type of player, would he fit in today's NBA? Because you look at the shape of him, and I don't see any players in the NBA that resemble the size of Glenn Davis. And he wasn't a massive, you know, he wasn't tall, but I wonder if a guy like him plays in the NBA today.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, look, he was a fairly effective mid-range shooter, but obviously nowadays, for those sort of bigs that come off the bench, they've got to be able to move, play really solid defense, and probably, you know, preferably be able to hit a three or two. Now, maybe he adapts his game for that. But, you know, possibly, I mean, his career did end around that 2015-2016 range when the game sort of really started to change. Maybe that's not a coincidence.
Yeah, I don't think it was, Liam. And, you know, we went on the next season. I think we wanted to try and back up from, you know, what was a really poor performance in the next round against the Rockets. And, look, I think we needed to revamp a little bit. I think our bench was good. We had Jamal Crawford, who was a fantastic player over the time, Liam, but I still think we had more pieces to revamp. But obviously, that didn't work out. Something that I want to move on to in this game, Liam, was there were some great defensive battles happening on the court. We had Danny Green, who was manned up on JJ Redick for the majority of the game, and I thought that battle was very interesting and very even towards the game ending, Liam.
Yes. I mean, those two players played a huge role, really, in this game, I thought. Obviously, fairly similar style players as well in terms of absolute sharpshooters from beyond the arc. I think, you know, Green down the stretch was outstanding. JJ Redick as well. I mean, he hit a couple of massive threes in the last 5 minutes that really kept almost kept the Clippers in it, I thought, at that stage. I mean, the Spurs were threatening to pull away. There was a couple of times where they were 3 or 4 points up, and if they'd have just got the next basket, it might have tipped them over the edge, but Redick was huge, I thought.
Yeah, he made some really big shots in that last quarter. It was 2 3-point makes, Liam. But what I found was that Danny Green was superb on him. He was all over him for the majority of the game. He had the 5 blocks, Liam, Danny Green, this game, which is an awesome figure. He's a great shot blocker for a shooting guard. I think he's regarded as one of the best in the NBA, Liam, and this really backed it up. But what I found was when JJ got open every single time, he was knocking down that three like nothing else. There was just no stopping him, and it just showed how important he was to this lineup. He played the 42 minutes, and they had a lot of trust in him, even though he was going to be locked up so tight. At least it took out a good defender on the court, and he was still big when it mattered.
Yeah, 4 3-pointers, JJ Redick in the game, and of course, those 2 crucial ones down the stretch, like you just said. Hey, I actually had another look at Danny Green's defensive numbers in this game. 2 steals and 5 blocks, that is phenomenal. I do agree, though, those two shooting guards for both teams played a very key role. Just having a look at this box score as well, Tim Duncan, 27 and 11. The ageless Tim Duncan, of course, just, you know, 11 of 16 from the field. He was outstanding.
Yeah, he was fantastic, Liam. And Tim Duncan, he's such a silent assassin, Liam. He just goes about his work, Liam, and it's, you know, it's no nonsense. It's nothing flashy. A lot of the time, he's scoring these points off some really big buckets that the Clippers made. He'd just go to the other side. He'd put up a little post hook. He had so much class and finesse around the ring, and he was such a smart player, too. I know that Kevin Harlan mentioned in the broadcast, Liam, that he was letting Griffin bite on the pump fake every single time, and it caused Griffin to get 3 early fouls in the game. He was just a smart player, and it really showed in this conference Western Final.
Yeah, he was such a smart player, and you know that's obviously one of the reasons why his game aged just so gracefully. I mean, didn't rely necessarily on his athleticism to be effective as a player. His fundamentals, of course, he was, you know, nicknamed the Big Fundamental, was so solid around the rim. He could still score from the post right up until towards the end of his career. He was fantastic, and of course, you know, was a key reason why they had that tying bucket at the end before, of course, you know, we'll speak about the end of the game later. But yeah, Duncan was huge.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And I'm going to go to another Spur, Liam, who was now a Clipper, Kawhi Leonard. It was interesting to see a younger Kawhi Leonard. He was a year out of winning the finals MVP the year before, Liam. But something that I noticed is that he's put on a lot of size since this season, and he's obviously a lot more skillful in 2020 than he was in 2015. He still had a touch of rawness from what I noticed in this game.
Yeah, I was actually looking at his three-point percentage after watching this one because, yeah, I did notice the same thing. He was that kind of more raw offensive player who was more of a defensive threat. I believe this was the season he won the Defensive Player of the Year, so or one of two, actually. So definitely a different Kawhi Leonard back then. 2.3 steals, actually, he averaged that year, just looking at it. But it was after this season in 2015-16 when he started to shoot. He actually shot 44% from three the year after, and that was also his first All-Star appearance. This was a kind of the last season of that, you know, young, raw Kawhi before he turned into the absolute monster that he is today.
Yeah, I really think that this series would have spurred him to go to greater heights, Liam, because I thought that he was important at times. He made some big buckets in the last quarter, but there was plenty of times in this game where he had a few turnovers and just some, you know, unforced errors as well that didn't help the team down the stretch.
Yeah, look, it was sort of, you know, a thought I had watching this game when watching Kawhi in the Spurs uniform. Just thinking back to 2015, if someone had said to me that in, you know, 5 years' time, Kawhi Leonard would be playing for the Los Angeles Clippers, it would have been kind of hard to picture. I mean, this was a guy that sort of seemed like he, you know, fit the mold of the San Antonio's mantra, you know, in terms of being a quiet guy, just getting the job done for Coach Pop. For him to leave, you know, the Spurs just seem so far-fetched at this point.
I think so, Liam. I think that was the plan for San Antonio all along, was that they knew they had someone special on this roster that was going to be a big cornerstone for that franchise. We probably look at it today, Liam, and if Kawhi Leonard was still on the Spurs, you could argue that they're still a championship-threatening team right now. But yeah, you look at these two rosters for both teams, and the only player that still exists on their roster is Patty Mills.
Yeah, well, it's been extraordinary the tenure that Patty Mills has had there with the Spurs. He's carved out a really nice niche for himself on a really successful team. And it did sort of show the broadcast. I know Chris Webber was quite glowing, actually, in speaking of Patty Mills in terms of his, you know, how deadly he was from the three-point arc. I dare say, you know, this was still coming off the championship year the year before where, you know, him and Danny Green and... there was one more three-point shooter.
Marco Bellinelli. Was it Bellinelli?
It could have been. It might have been
Corey Joseph. Yeah.
Gary Neal is actually the guy I'm thinking of, I believe. Mm. Yeah, I mean, those three just absolutely lit the heat up in the finals. So I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, Mills was still being spoken about so glowingly. But, yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Before we move on to some of the Clippers players, Liam, I do have to mention, did you notice on Twitter that photo of Greg Popovich going around with the old Boomers top on?
I did. Yeah, that was a surprise.
I don't know what the link was with that. Do you have any idea?
Oh, the only thing I can think of is, you know, Brett Brown, obviously, the former. Yeah, he spent some time there. And possibly he got it from, you know, when he came into Australia last summer for the preparation for the World Cup. But it did look like an older logo, didn't it?
Yeah, it did look like it was a classic top Lamb. Okay, we're going to go on the Clippers side. I'm excited about some of these players we're going to speak about. Firstly, Matt Barnes, Liam. I don't think I saw him play a better game in the Clippers uniform. He was really big in the first quarter. He knocked down the three threes, and he really set the pace early on.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Look, two steals and two blocks as well. And, you know, obviously, when the Spurs were trying to tie the game with 1 second to go, and they threw up that alley-oop attempt to, I believe, Kawhi, Matt Barnes just gave this absolute volleyball spike, a nice defensive play to seal the series for the Clippers.
Yeah, it was massive, Lamb. He was such an energy guy. You know, he had plenty of negatives as a player as well, Lamb. He was quite emotional on the court, was prone to an ejection every now and then, but he was the heart and soul of this Clippers team. And I remember when he left to the Grizzlies, Lamb, I was shattered. I loved Matt Barnes so much. And I think for any championship team, at this time, Lamb, he was probably at the peak of his career. He was going to make an impact wherever he went. And, he was definitely massive for us this season, Lamb.
Yeah, he certainly, I think he kind of filled a niche for you guys as such. I mean, obviously had the really dangerous front court with Blake and DeAndre, you know, the dominant wizard point guard and Chris Paul, if you like, the sharpshooters and Redick and Crawford and even Austin Rivers to an extent. But having that really tough lockdown, you know, defender wing, that was the kind of the spot that he filled to perfection because there wasn't really anyone else in the roster at this stage who could do that.
No, there wasn't, Liam. JJ Redick was more of a three-point sharpshooter. He wasn't a great defender. But I thought Matt Barnes, offensively, he filled the hole in that first quarter when we really needed it. I think we were struggling to get buckets out of JJ early on, and he was able to fill that void hitting a few three-point shots.
Yeah, look, and obviously Chris Paul, we can't go through this game without talking about Chris Paul because he really is the story of this one. I mean, you know, the first quarter he was out. We cannot... forget this, that he actually left the court with, I believe, was a hamstring injury. And at one stage, you know, they were talking about, like, will he or won't he come back? Now, you know, in hindsight, he was probably never going to miss time unless he couldn't walk. So just a remarkable performance to play through the injury that he had, clearly.
Yeah, I don't think I saw Chris Paul play a bigger game than this Game 7, Lamb. He was unreal. I don't think I've seen a guy that was more in his element than Chris Paul in this game. And that was off one leg as well, Lamb. So you're right. He was off for 7.5 minutes between the first and second quarter, Lamb. And it was good that we held the ship together while he was off the court. Blake did a really good job. But Chris was unreal. That three ball that he was knocking down, the one at the end of the third quarter was just unreal. Because he had so many guys around him as well. And he just took that shot off one foot and knocked it down from court to court.
Yeah, that one definitely got my attention when that one went in. I wasn't expecting that, but hey, like, he was just unbelievably efficient this game. He was 9 of 13 from the field, 5 of 6 from 3, 4 of 4 from the three throw line, 6 assists, and only 1 turnover. Just crazy.
Yeah, they spoke about his turnover efficiency as well, Liam, earlier in the game, and how he only had 1 turnover from 25 assists from the past 2 games. Something remarkable like that. That's what Chris Paul's been known for, is that he's such an efficient player. And, Liam, he just looks so controlled when he's got the basketball in his hand. You just feel safe. You feel that Chris Paul's going to do something here. But, you know, I think some of the duties have to be handed off to Blake Griffin in this game because Chris couldn't play on ball as much. And Blake did a really good job because they were blocking him from, you know, entering inside the key, which happened a lot to Blake throughout his career because they knew how powerful he was. But Blake had the 10 assists for the game, Lamb, and he was really facilitating the ball well in Chris Paul's absence.
Yeah, he had the triple-double, Blake Griffin, which is obviously an outstanding game. Look, his handles by this point of his career were really tight. I mean, he could take it down the floor and really handled it with ease. He was fantastic. I mean, that was probably one of the ways that he developed as a player, wasn't he? Obviously, the three-point shot comes probably later in his career, but his ability to pass and handle the ball by this point was crisp.
Yeah, I think that's always been an underrated figure of his game, Liam, is his passing ability. He's always been good at it, Lamb, especially since Doc Rivers came in and probably put more of an emphasis on passing the ball. Him and DJ were a really good tandem. Blake would get the ball up to DJ for a lot of lobs in that era, Lamb. He would be... They'd have some set at the key, Lamb, where he'd lob him continuously. It happened so many times. So I was very used to seeing it, and it wasn't too much of a surprise for me to see Blake put up, you know, a big triple-double in Game 7, Liam.
Yeah, well, you know, that last quarter was probably, by far the most entertaining part of the game, as it often is. But at one stage, there was a couple of minutes remaining, and on the broadcast, they mentioned that there had been 25 lead changes. So it just gives you an idea of how much back and forth there was in this game.
Yeah, I was watching this game and I had the heart rate going up, Liam. Even though I knew the result, it was just like, geez, this is just swinging back and forth. And I think there was a total of 31 lead changes for the whole game, Liam. So it was just a seesawing event, and it didn't really let down the whole way.
Yeah, far out. I mean, look, those last few minutes were crazy. I mean, obviously, the Spurs kind of got out to that lead. They started to play some really good defense, really. I mean, obviously, they were a great defensive team at that time with the likes of, you know, Leonard and Danny Green there on the wings. But JJ Redick, as we spoke about earlier, hit a couple of massive threes. There was that one where he kind of pump-faked Danny Green and then was almost off balance, really, when he shot it, but just was absolute swish as soon as it came out of his hand. That was a big shot for a timeout.
Yeah, it was
for the Clips.
It was bad. It was a bad situation for the Clippers at the time. I think we were the 3 points down at the time, Liam, and we really needed that bucket because San Antonio earlier in that quarter looked like they were really taking control. We had made some really bad unforced errors early in that quarter. There's a couple turnovers that Blake made that really hurt, and Chris looked stuffed, Liam. He looked I don't know how he was out there. He was just limping all over the court. And I think JJ, you know, he hit the two threes, and then Matt Barnes hit a really big one just before the quarter ended as well.
Yeah, that and again, that was JJ Redick with the assist as well for that Matt Barnes three. I believe he kind of drove down to the low block and then dished it out to the top for a wide open Barnes. So it really can't be understated, I think, how important Redick was, along with obviously the two stars in Paul and Griffin.
Yeah, I think that was a major strength, Liam, was that because we had some really good 3-point shooters in that starting lineup, and JJ Redick and Matt Barnes was, you know, could knock down one as well. We had a lot of spacing as well, so guys like Matt Barnes and Chris Paul would get open quite easily because there was a lot of tension on JJ.
Yeah, well, how about that last minute? Because that was, you know, I mean, in real time, I imagine that would have gone on for about 10 to 15 minutes because obviously in the condensed version of the game that we're watching on YouTube, they're skipping the breaks, but there was so much action back and forth. And, you know, at times you thought, oh, the Clippers have got it here. And then Tim Duncan goes down the other end and gets fouled, then makes one of two. I mean, in the play prior, Chris Paul swished two or two from the three-throw line with absolute ease, as you'd expect. But just, you know, some seriously pressure situations that players from both teams, you know, really stood up in.
Yeah, there were some big moments. That's what I mean, Lane. This game had it all. Like, the players were playing great defense, but there was some awesome offense as well. There wasn't a lot of missed shots in the last quarter. The ball was going in, and Chris Paul, he hit one really big jumper, Liam, from the mid-range as well, that was quite contentious at the time. I think Tim Duncan thought he had no contact on Chris Paul at the time, but the foul did call, and I do want to get into this a little bit, Liam, but there was some really up in the air officiating decisions along with the time management as well at the end of the game. We'll probably get that into it later, Liam, but did you notice that call on Chris Paul as well?
I didn't was this the one where Chris Paul went and got the 2-3 throws to put him up by two? Is that...
I think it could have... Yeah, I think so. I think it might have been that one. Yeah, you are right. Yeah, that was the one.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with the controversy surrounding it. What was your take? Do you think there was anything that the referees got wrong, or...
I personally think it was touch and go. I think Timmy Duncan got under Chris Paul when he took the shot, but there wasn't a lot of contact, so it was quite a 50-50 call. And you know, if we had today's rules in the NBA with the coach's challenge, it would have been a close one to call.
Yeah, yeah. Look, there was another play as well with a minute and a half to go where there was that kind of chaos ball almost from the San Antonio Spurs. They were coming down on a fast break, and Danny Green had that wide open three-pointer. At this stage, it was 105 apiece. You know, if Green makes it, they go up by three. In the end, Tony Parker actually got the rebound and tipped it back up and in. I think we haven't really mentioned Parker yet in this one. I thought he, and this is towards, obviously, the twilight of his career. I think, you know, clearly upstaged by Chris Paul. But I thought he was really impressive in this game as well, Parker. You know, he certainly had a part to play.
Yeah, he was really strong earlier on in the game, Liam. I thought he helped set the pace for the Spurs, and they spoke about how he had really struggled this series and how he hadn't played this badly in a playoff series in a long time. And to me, when I was watching this game, this was just like the Tony Parker of old, that he was just doing the job for the Spurs at the time.
Yeah, we saw a couple of those, you know, floaters going down the lane. You know, obviously, for an undersized point guard, he was just so effective at scoring close to the rim, and that I think that showed as well, especially in the last quarter of this one. Look, I'd love to touch on that last minute because that was really quite crazy. I think it was about 10 seconds to go, and the Clips are up by 2 points, and obviously it was a Spurs timeout. And at that point, you thought, I mean, even though the Spurs were always calm in the situation, they went out and drew up the play, you thought, surely, you know, the Clips are home here. But of course, it didn't turn out that way, did it?
No, it didn't, Liam. That was the bucket that, not the bucket, sorry, the foul that Timmy Duncan drawed, Liam, in the middle of the key. And it was quite frantic. There was players everywhere, and the foul did get called, and I thought, you could see the Clippers bench, they thought that one was quite contentious as well, but it did happen to get called as a foul, Liam, and it was a great ending because of it.
Yeah, that was an interesting call, that one. I was actually kind of hoping for a different angle on that one, because Duncan kind of got it right in the middle of the key, went to put up a hook shot, and Matt Barnes kind of came over his other shoulder, and the foul, I believe, got called on, or was actually on Redick here, but it felt like Barnes was around there as well. I feel like from the angle we were looking at on the broadcast, it didn't look like a foul, but I could definitely see how from the other angle it potentially was. I wasn't sure personally. What was your take?
Yeah, Liam, I was in the same boat. I wasn't too sure either. The camera angle was sort of hard to see from the angle that they did show us. It was a side angle from the broadcast view, Liam. But, yeah, I think the ref was on the other side that did call the call. And, yeah, I'm not 100% sure either.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, you know, speaking of Duncan and the Spurs, I kind of had a bit of a thought that this kind of put it in perspective for me anyway, personally, about just how dominant they've been over a long period of time, because, you know, obviously we've been watching these Jordan documentaries that have been coming out over the last couple of weeks. Well, obviously the Spurs and Tim Duncan won the championship the year after Jordan's last dance as such, and then they won their last championship the year before LeBron's last championship. So, like, they basically bridged the gap between those two eras. It's just ridiculous that one player and one coach have been dominant for that long.
Yeah, Liam, I did notice that as well. I was actually looking at that 1999 season before we recorded today, just to have a look at Tim Duncan's career as a whole. And I feel like the Spurs are sometimes a little bit forgotten how good they were, because they didn't necessarily have a guy that was, well, I'm not going to say that he wasn't a great player. Tim Duncan's probably goes down as the best power forward of all time, but he wasn't a Jordan or a LeBron. He wasn't flashy, per se, Liam.
Yeah, he wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't flashy.
And I think, you know, San Antonio, they were also on a small market as well. I just feel like they don't get spoken enough about. And, you know, with this Last Dance documentary going on, I think the Spurs would be a fantastic team to explore. I'd love to see more of Greg Popovich behind the scenes, and also how this team worked, because you can tell that they were pretty tight-knit and they just knew how to get the job done.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there in regards to, you know, the Spurs not getting the credit they probably deserve. And it is because of the way they play and the fact they're in a small market. I mean, Tim Duncan was far from flashy. He never really wanted that kind of attention that most of the stars do, and that marketing potential that they try to live up to. And look, I know Bill Simmons has mentioned this a lot in his work, Jared, that, you know, Duncan was, in fact, he had the better NBA career out of the two dominant players in that sort of 2000s era were probably Kobe Bryant and Tim Duncan. Obviously, rest in peace to the great Kobe Bryant. But Duncan had the better career. And I think, you know, that's something that a lot of people would actually raise their eyebrows at. But he did. I mean, you know, had the two MVPs. He was probably dominant for longer. I don't know. That's something that goes under the radar, I think.
Yeah, you raise that, Liam. It's actually something that I haven't thought. Like, I do know that those two guys that, you know, they won a combined 10 championships in that era of basketball in between them. But you are dead correct, Liam, when you speak about the effect they had as players. Tim Duncan, he was good all the way through his career, and he had the 27 points in a big playoff game, Liam. And you look at Kobe, and maybe he was hindered by that Achilles injury that he had. That probably was the reason why his career didn't flourish all the way through and didn't end up on a, you know, on a MVP high, as you could say, Liam. But yeah, you do make a really good point.
Yeah, and I think that kind of period after Shaq left and the Lakers kind of were teetering around the edges of the playoffs and even didn't make the playoffs, I believe, one or two of those seasons. Kobe was putting up huge numbers. I think that was around the era that he put up the 81-point game. And look, not to take away from the greatness of what he did during that time, but for Duncan, they were just consistent throughout. The Spurs were a contender every single year for about 12 years or 13 years, which was just outstanding. So, yeah, I thought that it's an interesting viewpoint. At the very least, they should be spoken about in the same conversation, at least, I would say.
Duncan and Kobe. I agree, Liam. And I think, look, if you're going to defend Kobe on this one a little bit, Liam, the Spurs have always had a fantastic core built and a great coach all the way through, you know. Duncan's had a lot of support from Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker since 2003, so it's lasted that whole era. They timed their era perfectly, Liam, in terms of having a big three, and the fact that they kept them all as well was even more phenomenal.
Yeah, and obviously David Robinson as well before that with the 99 and 03 championships.
Yeah,
they've always done a great job with their roster building and even bringing in you know, players that possibly weren't too, you know, sought after on the open market, and they bring them in and make them into really handy rotation players. I mean, you know, guys like Patty Mills, Boris Diaw, even, you know, Danny Green is probably the best example, I would say, in terms of, you know, a guy that wasn't really that sought after, but he was a really, really handy player once he came to the Spurs.
Yeah, I think people forget that Danny Green was... he used to be a Cavalier back with LeBron back in 2009. So I don't think a lot of people remember that Danny Green's been around for a long time. And yeah, San Antonio definitely shaped him into the player he was. He was a massive player in that playoff series against the Heat when they won that championship, Liam. And yeah, he's definitely forgotten.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, last year with the Toronto Raptors, he's really shaped himself into that kind of rotation player who's just a winning guy. And it just seems like for the next 3 or 4 years at least, he's always going to be in demand in the free agency market for a player that you want to sign if you've got, you know, two or three all-stars on your team.
Yeah, the 3-and-D, Liam, it helps win championships. And yeah, we're seeing players like Danny Green, they go around and get paid good money because of it.
Well, should we talk about the shot, Jared? Because that really was... I don't know. For me, Jared, it was one of those ones that, you know, in hindsight, it's like, yeah, that happened. But once you're in the moment and you watch the game and you realize how unlikely that was to go in, that really blew me away.
Yeah, Liam. When CP3 took the shot, Liam, he took it from his waist. It was all the way down his waist. And they spoke about the lack of explosion that he had because of that hamstring. But he just found a way. And yeah, he tossed that ball up. It didn't look very likely when you look at it at the angle that shows him front on, Liam, but he just willed that ball in, and yeah, it probably goes down as a top three moment in Clipper history, Liam, just because of, you know, the significance of the game and what Chris Paul was going under.
Yeah, that was an unbelievable game winner. 9 seconds remaining, they have the timeout, inbound it to Chris Paul, he gets it at the top, sort of drives to his right, he's got Danny Green on, he manages to force some separation between the two. But then Tim Duncan comes over and with his huge frame, contests the shot, I must say, very well. He pretty much smothered him. And as you said, he was on one leg, somehow gets it off his waist, just chucks it up, and it banks in perfectly. I could not believe it.
Yeah, it was just so good watching it again, Liam. I've only watched the game once, which was live, and I obviously watched plenty of, you know, highlights of this game, but watching the game as a whole again, it just brought back some special memories. I do want to bring up something with Chris Paul. We know that, you know, he's never won a championship so far in his career, Liam. He's been quite unlucky, and I don't think there was any time more unlucky when he copped that injury against Golden State. I think it was in Game 5, Liam, or I think Game 5 or Game 6. I think it was Game 5. I think Lamb, he has got to be one of the most unlucky players in the NBA in terms of success.
Yeah, he's sort of, you know, as you said, he's gotten near it, you know, in the past. Obviously, that Houston series when he did get injured in, was it game five, and he missed game six, if I'm remembering correctly?
Yeah, I think so.
Certainly a few what-if moments for Chris Paul. But his longevity, I mean, we spoke about Tim Duncan and how long he's been a great player for. I mean, this season with OKC has been a real testament to Chris Paul, I think, and how much of a professional he is, really, with his body and his game.
Yeah, Liam, he's been fantastic for OKC. I don't think he's missed many games at all. I don't think he's missed one, if I remember correctly. So you can tell that he does the best he can to get his body 100%, as much as it can be. We know that he's got a massive injury history in the NBA, Liam, and I really do hope that he does get some success at some time. It'll be interesting to see if he does stay at OKC or gets moved on, but something that's interesting, Liam, is that we see that the New York Knicks have been rumored to get him recently, Liam, and I read a quote, Liam, that said something about Chris Paul. He always brings success to the franchise that he goes to, and it is true, Liam. He goes to the Clippers, he brings that team out of the gutter into a contending playoff team. He helps Houston almost get to the finals. They probably should have gotten to the finals in that one year he did get injured. And he goes to OKC and he sets up a really fantastic culture. He's definitely going to be a Hall of Fame player and someone that, you know, he probably goes down as the best point guard, best pure point guard, at least, you know, in the last 10 years.
Yeah, certainly in this era, this kind of, yeah, this late 2000s era, certainly he's right up there. I mean, before that, it's probably only really, you know, the Steve Nashes and the Jason Kidds of the world who kind of rival him in that respect. This Knicks rumor, Jared, fill me in. I haven't heard anything about this.
I had a notification from the Bleacher Report, Liam, that came up on my iPad yesterday, I think, and I think it's true, Liam. They speak about, I think it's Leon Rose was Chris Paul's former agent of sorts, I think, Liam, and it was rumoured earlier in the year that the New York Knicks were after him, and then the rumour comes out again. I actually think there's a bit of truth in it, Liam, and the quote that I thought that was quite showing to me, Liam, was, you know, speaking about Chris Paul bringing success to franchises, and I know that he's on some big money, Liam, but if they're looking to someone to set the culture in an NBA team, Liam, I think Chris Paul's a good guy to go for if you're the New York Knicks.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. There's so many ways of looking at it. I think it does kind of come down to if they do that one, what they give up, because as you said, he will be a great influence on the franchise and on those younger players and really re-enliven the team and hopefully maybe even bring them back to the playoffs. I mean, he can have that sort of an effect on a team, but you have to wonder if they did have to give up a first round pick or two, would it be worth it? Because obviously the upside with Paul and a roster around him that isn't quite, you know, where it should be to contend, the upside is obviously limited.
Yeah, I think you're right, Liam. It's going to be a tough one to pull a deal off because we know that OKC don't want to give him for nothing. I think there's been plenty of teams put in some inquiries about Chris Paul, but the buying price has just been too much. And, you know, there's a good case to say that Chris Paul is worth a first-round pick early, Liam, even though he's of that age. If he can help, you know, set a good culture up and help some of the young guys in your team, he could really set the franchise like the New York Knicks up, you know, for the future.
Yeah, well, I suppose with the Knicks, they really just need those couple of young players that they can actually build around, because at the moment, a lot of those young players there, you know, the Kevin Knox, the Frank Ntilikina, none of these guys are looking like they're actually going to be the franchise guys over the next 5-10 years. So if they can just get those two or three players maybe that they can build around and then bring Chris Paul in to play alongside them, I think that would be really a really good move. But until that day, I probably wouldn't I wouldn't give up the opportunity to draft that next potential franchise guy if they did have to give up a top five pick, I guess, for Chris Paul.
Yeah, I wonder how it works out, Liam, because I think that maybe if they trade a future first rounder, maybe next year's first rounder, let's say for a hypothetical, Liam, the New York Knicks get a LaMelo Ball in this draft and they can get Chris Paul beside him, Liam, at the New York Knicks, it could be something, you know, that he could do what he's doing with OKC now, bring that team to the playoffs and get some of these young guys some really good playoff experience. I think there's plenty of arguments on both sides for it.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what does happen. But look, I mean, just coming over how the Knicks have gone over the last 5 or 7 years or so, they probably could do a lot worse than bringing Chris Paul, that's for sure. Yeah.
Mate, I think if Chris Paul comes, we might see a bit of a Melo reunion back in New York as well. He'll probably want to bring some of his old mates down there.
Who knows? Yeah, well, I mean, Chris, I'm sure they'd probably have him back, I think, at this stage, the New York fans. And he's been pretty good for the Trailblazers. So that'd be fun, I reckon, if that happened. We'll get LaMelo in there. We'll get Chris Paul. We'll get Carmelo Anthony. They'll be the team to watch, won't they, for the first month at least.
Oh, it'll make plenty of highlights in New York. Sorry, plenty of headlines in New York, Liam.
All right, well, is that all you wanted to touch on today for this game?
Yeah, I think we've covered most things, Liam. It was a fantastic game of basketball, and I'm happy we got to cover a Clippers one. Have you got an idea of what game we're going to cover next, Liam?
Well, speaking of these traditional point guards, I did speak of them before, Jared. Steve Nash and Jason Kidd. Personally, I've been fetishing a little bit of Jason Kidd New Jersey Nets recently, Jared. I was on YouTube the other day, and I was looking at the top 45 assists of his career, Jason Kidd. And I tell you what, you get to about number 43, and you're thinking, how is this not in the top five? Because they are ridiculous passes.
That sounds very exciting. I actually haven't looked too much into Jason Kidd. I know that he's a very big point guard in terms of that era, Liam, very well known and a fantastic player. I'm looking forward to watching that game.
I'd be very keen to look into that one as well. All right, well, let's. I reckon we chat in a couple of days' time when this episodes 5 and 6 come out of the Jordan doc, and then we'll see how we go. We'll get to that Nash and Kidd game as well in due course.
Awesome. Thanks, Liam.
Catch you next time.